As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
Welcome to this episode of the Elite Advisor Podcast. Today, we're going to be hanging out with Daryl Stinson. At one point, Daryl was one of the top athletes in the world. But through his personal journey, he had to go to a point to where he was realized he was being pushed by the pain of his life, and he had to figure out a way to unlock purpose in his life. Now he is a dynamic coach, speaker, runs his own events. It is an awesome story. I know you will take away great things from it. Let's jump in. Daryl, thanks for being here, buddy.
Thanks for having me, bro.
Man, I'm excited to have you here. I love when I get to connect with folks that my audience probably typically wouldn't be able to hang out with and chat with. So this would be great. So we have financial advisors listening up who are all entrepreneurs, you know, whether they like it or not. And so I'm ready to dive in and challenge them a little bit.
Let's get it.
All right. Well, I'd love for everybody, if you give kind of your high level background, you have an awesome story, and I'll kind of dive in piece by piece with you.
Yeah, totally, man. I was a former high-level Division I athlete. I'm originally from Jackson, Michigan. And so around 2007, 8, I became one of the top 100 athletes in the world for basketball and football. Got recruited to play football at Central Michigan University. I actually went there to play both sports, but only ended up playing football because, you know, I was much better than I guess they thought I was going to be my freshman year, and they didn't want me to get hurt. So they used it as a recruiting tactic to get me to play both. So I'm still a little bitter about that. Had a lot of success early on. We almost won the MAC championship freshman year. I was supposed to be one of the next best athletes to come out of the state of Michigan. I'll never forget when my one of my position coaches, Steve Stripling, told me and a guy named Antonio Brown to sit down, and he looked at us and he said, it's not a matter of if you're going to go to the NFL, it's just a matter of when. Wow. And so, you know, I was a true freshman. Antonio Brown was a sophomore at the time. And, you know, I think it was two seasons later, Antonio Brown left, got drafted sixth round, became one of the top 10 receivers to play in the NFL. And that, before the end of that season, I got rushed to a hospital because I ruptured a disc in my back and almost had my left leg be paralyzed, and I had to have back surgery. Good. So, you know, my career should have ended, and kind of make a long story short, I actually came back after that back surgery and, you know, put my body through 2 years of, you know, drug addiction in order to continue to play. And I did start. I just was a former version of myself. And ultimately, when that couldn't go on anymore, you know, I had this life-changing experience in a psychiatric unit after, you know, I attempted to end my life. And what that did is, you know, it once I found faith in that psychiatric unit, once I learned about self-care in that psychiatric unit, I was on fire for like, man, I'm going to do impact in this world in a purposeful, meaningful way. I'm here for this, on this planet for a reason. How do I actually do that? And that's when I got into like higher education marketing, and then eventually that became speaking and communication at a high level. And so kind of been riding that train ever since. And that's a little bit of the backstory of how we, you know, before we get into some of the other professional side of things.
Man, no doubt. Thanks for sharing that. I felt that in my body as you were saying it. I'm probably sure it's impossible to get people, you know, with you. And I'm sure the hardest points of that journey, if we could take it kind of a step at a time from like the beginning, like you had a identity in something that did sports kind of just naturally happen for you? Did somebody around you at the time say, hey, you need to go pursue this? Or what was the, how did you even get on that path to start with?
Well, I was always good in athletics. I was from the inner city of Jackson, Michigan. There's a lot of athletes that come out of that city. Athletics runs in my family. My aunt qualified for the Olympics. My dad was Division I safety at the same school I went to, Central Michigan, in the mid-80s. And he was a 6'2" safety that ran a 4.3. So, you know, I had a lot of good athletic genes. And so it was kind of always like, even at our family reunions, we were always like competing athletically. So it was like, you always had that choice to be an athlete if you wanted. And for me, I didn't see too many other options that would, you know, help me make a lot of money. And a lot of that was just because of my paradigm, my exposure. But at the time, it was like only successful people that I knew that were Black, they were either rappers or they were athletes. And I was like, well, so I might as well do both. That way I have a highly successful chance that I'm going to be, you know, rich here. And so I did. I was a rapper and I was an athlete. And so I just happened to be much, much better at athletics than I was at rapping. And so that's why that kind of worked out that way.
Nice. And yeah. So you were on that path. That was your identity. I mean, was there a point in that where you were doing it in a healthy, balanced way? Or were you like, I'm an athlete and this is my life?
It was never healthy balance because it was never my purpose in that way, right? Like, I was always supposed to be this guy I am today. I was just afraid to be him, you know? And so when we're afraid to be who we are, we be some of who we are, not all of who we are. And so I was being like the competitor side of me, but I wasn't being creative, writer. I wasn't doing any of that stuff. And so, man, it wasn't healthy. It was driven by scarcity and fear. Which is part of what made me a monster is that I wasn't, you know, I was so afraid to be stuck in the hood that I outworked everybody and became better than everybody. But, you know, it didn't serve me long term because I had a system of success. I didn't have a system of self-care. So I had no internal alignment, no real values I was holding myself to. I was just like all work, no play, make it happen.
So as you were in that, I think for all of us to some degree, we're maybe faced with I'm trying to be something I'm not. Life hits us and shakes us out of it potentially.
Yeah.
To somehow get on a more true path. For you, that you fought it pretty hard and big things happened to shake you out of that. What was that season like? Obviously, it was injury, identity. How would you describe what it took for you to say, hey, I'm going to drop that identity and pick up a different one?
Totally. Yeah, I'll answer the question, but I want to like directly because it's from a high level, because I know everyone's not going to be like in my situation facing depression. True. On a high level, everyone always has this thing that's like calling, inviting them to more, right? Write this book, take this company in this way. Sometimes it's not about like a bigger thing or a new thing. It's about a different way of approaching a similar thing. Hey, show up with more authority. Show up with more, you know, playfulness as a leader, show with more vulnerability as a leader. There's always this thing that's inviting us. And typically, pain has to push us or the vision has to pull us. I got that from Michael Beckwith. And so for me, like, it was a lot of pain pushing, but I don't want people to think that's the only way to evoke change. Because you can get so connected to the, you know, promise or the vision of what's possible if you follow that invitation. Like, what happens if I show up as a more playful leader? What happens if I show up as a more vulnerable leader? What happens if I show up, you know, what happens if I finally, you know, stop thinking I have to wear a suit to be respected? And what if I just wear what I want to wear to be expected? Like, when we get so connected to the possibility of that vision, it actually creates the same thing that we get from fear or pain to drive us to change. Okay, so sometimes it's like you either gotta like get so connected with the pain of what it feels like to not be in it that you change, or you get so enwrapped in the vision of what the results will be that you finally just do the thing. Okay, so for me personally, it was just a lot of pain pushing in that narrative, a lot of pain. So yeah, there was a lot of like, you know, me trying to fit in with other people. I was trying to be like this athlete, this jock. I sold drugs throughout the state of Michigan because I was covering the cost of my healthcare expenses. Because the university made me sign a liability waiver after I came back from the back surgery because they knew that it was, you know, a very unwise thing to put a guy that was fresh out of a back surgery in the middle of a battle, you know, as a defensive lineman. So, man, there was a lot of stories of like me trying to hang on and cling on and white knuckle my way to success in this athletic realm while my life was like, oh, you're misaligned. Oh, you're developing addiction. Oh, now you're selling drugs. Oh, well, now you've got two different girlfriends that you're in a problem with. Like everything was just a mess in my life. But the thing that was working so well that nobody noticed the mess.
Got it.
Yeah.
No, I love that. That hit with me. It's the pain pushing or the purpose pulling.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure on the surface, if anybody was given that option, they would choose the purpose pulling.
Yeah.
But I feel, you know what I'm saying? Like if we had a choice. But I feel like when I'm talking to you now, it's like, I know like purpose is pulling you. I can feel it as we talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if I meet many people that the purpose is pulling them. It feels like it's the ignore the pain, hide the pain.
Yeah.
Until it gets so much that I'm forced to do something else. Like how do you coach people now or explain to people and like recognizing those two things and then picking the healthier one?
Totally. Well, part of it is helping them to see what they're choosing, because most people would never like say that that's what they're doing. Oh, well, I'm running from pain. It's like, no, I'm about impact. I'm about impact. It's like, well, your heart's about impact. But your behavioral patterning is based on fear and scarcity and striving. And it doesn't make your impact less. It really doesn't. It doesn't make you wrong. It just makes you unaware.
Yeah.
And so part of it is I try to help them to become aware. How do we do that? My tool, because of my modality, and there's a lot of master teachers, they have different modalities, right? Somebody might have a marketing modality. Somebody might have a life coaching modality. Mine is speaking, okay? And so I get them into story. Tell me your story. How'd you grow up? What did you do? Always in the story, there's a loop that they're repeating. Usually, it's something to do with mom or dad. If not mom or dad, some type of authority, a figure in our professional career or something like that. Like, it's always somebody that we perceive as authority who we want to love, expect, receive us in a certain way.
The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you. So my question to you is like the choosing, you were saying is there's different modalities as you try to get people into story through the communication side.
Right. So you ask them a question. I'm asking them questions about their story. Oh, what was it like growing up? What was your family dynamics like? Oh, okay, cool. Did you have siblings? Okay, cool. What was some of your pressures that you faced in elementary school, in high school, in college? We usually don't make it to college before we find the thing that they're stuck on. And it's like, oh, yeah. And then there's this one time I came back from soccer practice and I had scored like 3 goals. And dad was like, but you missed the fourth. And now I feel like nothing I do is good enough. So I work hard and hard and hard. And even though I got Fortune 100 company clients, and even though I got this, I still don't feel like I'm enough. And it'll never be enough because dad.
Whoa.
We found it. Pain's pushing you, huh? And what does that create? Oh, well, now my team's overworked and this is happening. And I'm saying yes to more things than I actually want to say. And I've got savior complex. I'm doing this. Okay. Okay, cool. Well, what do you wish dad or mom would have said to you or heard from you? I wish they would have just seen me, loved me. Yeah, me too, man. Yeah. For sure. Okay, cool. Well, what can you do in your life now to evoke that same feeling? What does it mean to be seen? When's the last time you got vulnerable with somebody and had like a positive response? Like, we start to build some of those, because they're not bad needs. They're unmet needs that didn't get met when we were younger. And so we have a fear that they're not going to get met now that we're older. Okay. Oh, yeah. And then the other side of that was, okay, now that that's clear, now that we kind of get what part of this emotion is being based out of fear, it's clear what parts of it now are connected to service. And now you see the difference of when you're connected to it without the baggage of that. Okay, cool. Now, It's like being clean and clear. It's like after, like, it's like the equivalent is like if you ever went on like a physical fast and like you feel now your being's lighter, you have more emotional clarity, mental clarity. What I just described is like an emotional fast. Yeah. It's like you get so emotionally clear that now you have greater capacity to serve because clarity expands capacity. Yeah. Right? So that's how my modality is story. And through that, now they see, okay, cool. I was running from pain. Now I can connect to purpose. Now I can connect to promise. Now I can connect to vision. And I can do it without the sandbags or the weight of the pain, but with the power that the pain produced. Because in all those stories, there's always that linchpin of, I'm so mad at mama. I'm so angry at mama. And we think we have to forgive them. And really, once you're in this practice, it turns into gratitude because you realize something. If they would have been more loving, I would have never became who I was. If they would have been more affirming, I would have never became who I was. It actually produced my power. So now I'm not mad at them. I'm grateful. Thank you for being average. You made me exceptional. No, just kidding. Don't say that to your parents. Don't say that to your parents.
No, I remember once being in a room with a business coach. And I remember a line he said once is, if it's hysterical, it's historical. Which was powerful for me because I was like, oh, that means if somebody's reacting in a way that doesn't match the situation, like it's something else. Like there's something behind that.
So That's good.
But also for me, there was a fear. And when I played athletics, like I will lose my fire if I lose the edge. Like there was something there that I don't think I can have both. I remember times I'd be frustrated even in business when I was like, I get negative feedback when I'm operating a certain way. But the same operation is getting me certain results that I'm getting praised for.
I played sports.
I was pretty aggressive. And I was like, no, but I'm the guy you want on your team when we're in the game. But in practice, you're mad at me when I'm also getting it. So I'm like, you got to pick one. I can't pick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Luckily, I think through, again, the pain pulled me for a long time.
Yeah.
That I was like, wait, no, there's still an edge to me, even if it's like a calm, humble confidence. Like I'm finding I'm not there yet, but I think there is a path to be the truer version of myself that's not living out of fear, but also people would be around me and still be like, man, that guy's bringing some energy.
Still
got like a healthy chip to like change the world and help people, but I'm also not trying to save the world at the same time.
It's like urgency without anxiousness. You know, like there is an urgency. Tomorrow's not promised. What I do does make an impact. People do need help. So I'm urgent about it, but I'm not anxious about it because of the place that I come from. I realize that there's a much bigger play in this world than just me. And that if I create from a space of anxiousness, I can only reproduce who I am. So I'm reproducing some level of anxiousness in the world versus reproducing, you know, power and peace.
Yeah.
So it's important. Go ahead.
What would you say? So financial advisors that are listening, this is a world that's kind of fraught with, you know, you hit this benchmark, you win a trip, very surface driven metrics on success, mainly financial. You're making enough money, therefore you're doing a good job. I feel like when purpose kicks in, like the financial becomes almost a lagging indicator of impact and value added to the world, which is a good thing. But I almost feel like there's an element of you have to drop some of the old metrics and pick up some new ones. Like, how would you explain that to an advisor?
I don't feel like they're not separate. If you think about McDonald's from the standpoint of solving a need that they feed people, the person who solves the most needs makes the most money. Impact's not separated from service. Mm-hmm. iPhones, how many more households are they in? Well, they have more money. So it's not, and by the way, a lot of these people have this false perception that a lot of these spiritual teachers were broke. They weren't broke. They are what I call relationship rich, which is a different currency. Because all currency is meant to do is to create a level of freedom. Well, how much money do you need when you don't have to pay for the venue because you're Mother Teresa? Well, you don't have to pay for your flight because you're Mother Teresa. Well, all your business is covered because you're Mother Teresa. Let alone if they have any business savviness themselves and just know how to set up business, which is always easier when you have trust. We always know we can do more business when people trust us. Well, who trusts spiritual teachers? Everybody, right? So it's like whatever they sell, you're buying. Even if it's like anointing oil that doesn't work.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sorry to say that. I shouldn't have said that.
No, you're
but good. You get my point. You get my point. And so part of it is eliminating the paradigm that there's a separation from impact and finances. It's also limiting the paradigm that if I want more of one, then I'm so less of the other. Okay. And now it's about, well, how do I purify my impact and service in this? So it's like, okay, what does that create? What does financial freedom create in people's life?
Yeah.
You know, all those things. Okay. You get lather than that. And here's what I would say to financial people and how this applies is that most people in the financial industry, I know what they're going to say. They're going to bite me for saying this. But I'm talking about from a customer standpoint. Here's how I view them. They're all numbers people. They all say that they can take my money and multiply it. And I know what they're going to say. They're different. We do differently. But they all sound the same because it's not my expertise. I actually don't understand the difference between what you're doing and this person doing. You both say you can multiply my money. So now I'm choosing the person who I feel like cares the most about multiplying it and who's the most connected to my values by which I want it multiplied. Wow. So that's how it's connected, because everybody's doing the math game in that industry, and very few people are doing the other side of the game. And I think that's the side of the game that would make whoever's doing it the best in the world at doing it, because they should get both sides. Similar to me, I can teach speaking from an emotional, spiritual level at its highest. But I could also talk to you about the industry and how much you should make and how much you should charge and what the operation should be and what your follow-up system should be and what your email. It's both.
Yeah.
That's what masters do. And you got a bunch of people who are masters at finances and they're masters at explaining the why behind it, but they're too emotionally suppressed. Sorry. To actually express the depth of their passion that they have about it. They start talking about it and they're so used to not being emotional that they can't be emotional.
So how do you tap into that? I know like in my life, I was almost forced into it. You know, I'd do a bunch of work, people like extracting it out of me.
Yeah. I'm curious, how were you?
I was, I think from a business standpoint, in order for someone to trust me, I had to appear like I had it all together.
Yeah.
So
like everybody
say, man, when Sten enters the room, like I'm here to solve your problems. I got the answer. While that helped me in business at times, cause like, man, he just gets stuff done. Very efficient, measurable results. I don't think I was making like personal connections. I wasn't creating trust, you know, rapport as well, but I was getting business done.
Yeah.
It wasn't until my world kind of fell apart that for my own health and for my kids, I was like, I got to tap into something else here that's more true of me. I got to be able to have harder conversations. I got to be able to put down the facade.
Yes.
But I'm thinking back, if I was in my 20s again and somebody's trying to tell me, like, how could I have tapped into that without it being, you know, forced out of me out of almost survival? Like, no, I need to be more real. I almost can't carry this weight anymore, even though I wish I could.
Totally. I'd be reminiscent if I wouldn't tell you about my faith. Because the nature of that is like, oh man, there's a bigger picture beyond me. And that's like the beckoning of purpose. So for me, that was part of it. Because I had to go, there's a bigger world than just my get rich dreams.
Yeah.
I'm here for a reason. Okay. And I told you about my modality of story. There's lots of modalities. I would say you could also get to the same route through mirror, M-I-R-R-O-R work, mirror work. Staring yourself in the mirror until you get so connected to why you're here that you actually pierce beyond your insecurities and see your divine image. That's another way to do it. Mm. All you're trying to do is come back home. Okay, so it has to be through the route of feeling, though. So if you were talking about 20-year-olds or even people that even just have a hard time getting to that space, it starts with feeling. So I just told a client, I did intensive day, okay? They're new to this work. So I told them, okay, here's your instructions. You're going to express, you're going to do emotional accounting, and that's going to lead to clarity. Expression, emotional accounting, clarity. Okay, expression. Okay, at the end of your day, take a 15-minute walk. Go through your day and talk about what happened and then practice expressing your feelings of how you felt about what happened.
Hmm.
Okay, I went to this meeting. How did you feel about that? Okay, well, I was kind of tired, kind of this. I was mad that they said this. It starts to create a habit of expression, okay? Now you got to do emotional accounting. It's like emotional accounting is the same thing as financial accounting is, but it's emotions. So financial, we know that we can't say everything's in the miscellaneous category. It doesn't give us the right optics to make corrections. Same thing emotionally. We can't just be like, oh, I'm tired today. Oh, I'm overwhelmed today. It doesn't give us the right optics that we need to make clear decisions to see this pattern of running from pain playing out in our life. So we got to account it emotionally. Okay, well, out of all these things, what I talked about my whole day, which ones have the heaviest emotional weight for me? Well, this or this. And it's going to be the things that have the hardest weight, I'm just spoiling the test for you, are going to be either pain things or purpose things. It's going to be like you're so frustrated at something because it's irritating and you need to correct it, it's causing you pain. Or it's like, ah, oh, I want to be in purpose, but I can't because of this. Or I'm in purpose and I love that part of my day. I just want more of my day to look like that. And you just start to develop this awareness and you account it. And now you start to know, oh, this is this. This is, it's actually not my work that's causing me overwhelm. It's actually this part of my work done in this way. I accounted for the emotions. I did accounting. Okay. So I expressed, I did emotional accounting. Now, because of that, similar to financial accounting, I have clarity. I have a space. I have power. I've got, it's easier to do the internal game when the internal is clear and organized. Just like it's easier to do the external game when your office is organized. Same way. So if people just did that 15 minutes at the end of their workday, they're going to go through what happened in their day and explain how they felt about it. What they will start to see is they'll get way better optics, like connector points on where they're running from pain and where they're connecting to purpose and how to navigate overall leadership with more emotional connection in general.
That's strong. I appreciate the permission to do what you're currently doing in a different way, as opposed to thinking I have to like reimagine my life, reimagine my career.
You don't
to accomplish this.
You don't have to exit your life to audit your life. Your life is always showing you what you're thinking about.
That's good.
You're always manifesting externally what's happening internally. You just are not reviewing it.
Yeah, to me, I feel like what I'm hearing, like the awareness of it almost has to come first.
Yes.
And it's fascinating as I start doing some of this awareness work and then using emotional words to call things versus like, hey, mm-hmm. I'm either good or I'm not. Like, it's not that simple. It's pretty complicated.
Yes.
Then you start realizing it's tough because not everyone's doing the work and don't have to, you know, you gotta actually be careful about when you bring it up.
I know.
And there's not a lot of people. And you know, I'm so thankful here you're deep in this work helping people because it's like, it requires something of someone else to sit in this with you and have this conversation
totally.
And give you feedback.
Yeah.
And their trauma may not allow them to sit in it with you, even if it's not about them.
Oh, yeah.
It triggers in them.
I know. That's why we do retreats. That's why we do in-person events, because it's so much easier in person because you read the physical and energetic cues before the person's in a full-blown trigger and can't get out. Got it. Okay. So as a guide, you just kind of like untriggering. That's a lot of what I do from stage that I think makes me effective. It's like the moment I feel defensiveness from the audience, like they're not adopting it, I'm like, uh-oh. Too much truth, too much emotion, too fast, gotta reconnect them. What most people do is they try to go Eric Thomas. Believe it more, more passion. And now you're just dumping revelation on people and it's shocking their nervous system.
Got it.
And the problem is that humans will do what they do in churches. Yay, thank you, it was so great. You're so amazing, it was great. Oh my God, it changed my life. And you ask them how, and they'll be like, well, no.
It made me feel something.
It made me feel something, and I shocked out in my nervous system, and I was in freeze mode the whole time because I don't know how to integrate anything you just said, but it sounds true. So I don't want to sound like I disagree. And there's obviously not time because you just did a 30-minute sermon and left, or not sermon, you just did a 60-minute speech and then rolled in the next speaker that did another 60-minute speech. Hmm. I never actually had time to integrate. Yeah, that's dying in this industry. Because AI is moving so fast and the world's moving so fast that people's nervous systems are shot. they're getting so overwhelmed that like that's not even attractive anymore. Yeah. I've heard so many people like, oh my God, 9 teachers. Oh my God, I'm not even implementing what my one is telling me. Hold on. But they're like, oh, a 3-day retreat on one problem and solve it. And then I get to breathe and get a massage too. Ah.
That sounds nice. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Dude, I love that. So what would you say to our advisors as we wrap up? There's so many layers to your teachings. I'm sure where you can take it if you have somebody in person is overwhelming and beneficial. But what would you say to them if there's like a struggle or some resistance, even the awareness point of like, have I ever done this work? Do I need to do this work?
Okay. What would you say to them? I'll take you from a bar that I just got this weekend that life is about the debrief. Life is about the debrief. Think about this. If you wanted somebody to go market and grow your business, the first thing they're going to ask you is a debrief question. Oh, tell me about your experience. Okay. Oh, who are you trying to reach? Okay. Let's think about that. Let's debrief. What do you need? What do you need? Who are you looking for? What are you trying to target? Okay. If you're trying to find your purpose, you start not in visioning the future. You start in reflecting on the past. Well, how was I like when I was a child? What were some of my innate passions? How did I do? Why did I choose the degree? Why did I move into the career that I want? You debrief. Hey, you want to improve the operations of a company. Hey, cool. Hire us. And then, okay, now we'll start to what? Debrief the company. Oh, tell me about your revenue last year. Tell me about your operations. Tell me about what's working, what's not working. Debrief. Life is about the debrief. Hey, in athletics, the people that won the most is the people that watched the most film. But people don't watch the film of their life. So therefore, they repeat the patterns in it. And there's a paradigm of personal development that's like 1% better, 1% better, 1% better. It's a great paradigm because at least you're doing something. But it's also a limited paradigm because you don't have to get 1% better. You can actually be 100% new. How? Debrief. Debrief. So, A, I will say to everyone, I gave you a perfect example of what you could do to debrief. Debrief your day. Set a 15-minute timer at the end of your day. Talk about, go walk in nature, take a 15-minute walk. The walk is actually important because the physical movement of the body does make it easier to express the emotion because it's usually suppressed in our cellular memory. We get used to suppress. Don't have time to open that loop. So sorry I opened it. But you're walking for 15 minutes a day, talking about what happened in your day and how you felt about what happened. If you talk about what happened and not how you felt, you will fail the assignment. If you talk about what happened and how you felt, you are now winning at this game. And then in that, there will be clarity. So that's a place to start for everybody, whether you're at a high level or at a low level, because there's always depth to every level.
That's good. For everybody listening, take account of like when Daryl said you failed at the assignment, how you felt about that.
I know. I knew that's going to make somebody like, oh, I'm going to do it right.
That's right.
You see what I'm saying?
There's no right or wrong way. Just do it. Yeah.
There isn't a right or wrong way. I just want somebody to feel like there is. Well, no, that's not true. If you don't do the emotions, you don't have the data that makes the exercise worth it. And you'll do it and be like, it didn't work. It'd be like, you didn't say anything emotion. It's an emotional accounting exercise. It's like saying your financial accounting didn't work, but you didn't look at your numbers.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good word. Yeah. Man, I appreciate you, bro. That's so helpful. For everybody listening, if they want to follow your stuff, obviously learn about your events, where should they go?
Yeah, hit me up, darylstinson.com. Any social media platform, my name will pop up. Stinson Speaks is usually my handle on Instagram or some other, I don't know, Twitter or whatever. But like Daryl Stinson, I'm pretty sure I'm Googleable.
Good deal. All right, brother. Yeah. Good to see you.
Yeah, appreciate you.